And it is Monday, March 2nd, 2015. It is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast. And it's 8 p.m. in the Middle East. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to go back to basic, to the Holy Land, to all what it represents for the world and its special people that are a custodian of the Holy Bible. And the city of Jerusalem, that where we had sent, you know, our prayer for so many years. This is Orly Benny Davis, and I'm very honored to be here today. Today we are the day in between, the day that Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to APAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, and tomorrow when he's going to honor Congress and thank Congress for everything he's done for the state of Israel. It's a day between. It's a day between, you know, when we have to decide where we're going, where we're approaching. And many people blaming him for trying to persuade himself in a way too strong. But he has no choice. He has no choice. The Jewish people have to fight for what, for the state of Israel. And they have no choice too, because they have no other place on earth that is dedicated to preserve the tradition, the custody that they had, you know, given by God. And it's not important to think, you know, where they are. They are, they're all faithful to where they sit. They, you know, the Jewish people have the tradition to honor whatever is around them. Comes from the greens that are around them, from flowers, trees, nature, and then animals and humankind. Of course, they are most sacred than the babies, that they are most delicate creature on earth. We are the custodian of God's way on this earth, from the God of Israel. And we have to understand that sometimes it's not easy task to hold the promise in your hand and see all what's happening around. You know, God of Israel is a mighty God. He took us from Egypt, you know, with Moses. Everybody can remember the story from Moses and the Exodus from Egypt. It's a very incredible story, and many people say, you know, it's only stories and it's not history. But whoever believes in God knows that it's history in it, and we have, and we are living still the, you know, the continuation of that history, and we still, we're not settled. That, you know, that enlightenment that we're supposed to preserve and give to the rest of the world together, you know, it's like a candle. When you light one candle, they all lit. You can lit each other. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you're in Australia, in America, in Africa. If you start lighting the candle, you can bring light all over the world. And that's our future. That's the wonder of these people, that we can share that light and continue. And you know, every time you want to distinguish that light, you have to really watch out, because if you pay attention and, you know, and you keep that preserved light, in that moment in time when there is all darkness, when you have that light, you can lose it again and start over again. And every time, the darkest time of history, it always started when distinguished the light of the Jewish people. And, you know, Israel was created after a horrible, horrible ordeal of the Second World War, when they distinguished so many lives from all countries, all countries. It was a time of destruction. For some reason, they decided to kill each other. And they found also the blame to blame the Jewish people. And now the light that was distinguished completely in Europe, I still, you know, still miss it. They still have, they're looking for it. And once they start bringing back the Jewish people again and lit it all again, you got those people who want to make it go away so they can control the darkness. Don't let the darkness take over. This is our world. This is love of the creation. We have to be together. We have to create more light and more promise. And we have so many seas to conquer, so many, you know, frontier to discover. We're still on Earth. We still, you know, we didn't go back enough time to the moon to discover what we can do and see. But sometimes the astronauts always, you know, when they look, they said, oh, how tiny it's all and how beautiful this creation. So today, when we are in between, when, you know, when Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke today, day back, to the next day that Congress will join session. I want to pray together with you all that the world will stay and understand that when we are calling to stop destruction of the world, it's a message that we're sending to the world. It's not directly only for the Jewish people. It's for the rest of the world. And I think maybe we can have the chance to listen to what was said today and what was said in general. I picked some segments so you can listen and maybe you could ponder with me and pray and give, you know, and light a candle for this world, because we all in this together and we all evolve with each other. And the love we share needs to be shown. Let's join it. I would like to let you listen to some of the pieces that I collected. So I'll be back after this segment.
Joining us now from Washington is Naftali Bennett, Minister of Economy, Chairman of the Beit Eudi. Shalom.
Shalom, Yoni.
So you spoke to the participants of APEC 2015 policy conference about the Iranian threat.
Yeah, we're looking at a very bad deal, indeed a disastrous deal that we have to do everything in our power to prevent. This deal effectively risks America's interest as well as Israel's interest. We have to understand that Iran, along this deal, will legally be able to acquire a nuclear weapon. It gets a definitive path to the weapon. It's unplausible, and we have to do everything to prevent it. Iran right now is developing intercontinental ballistic missiles. They don't need them to hit Israel. Their existing missiles do that job. The reason they're developing these intercontinental missiles is to hit New York, London, Paris. And the free world has to do everything now to prevent them from acquiring. And the main issue is you can get it. All you need to do is keep up those sanctions. Don't let up, and they'll ultimately have to fold.
Do you not trust the U.S. regarding Iran?
We're very concerned with this deal. It's if this deal is signed, it'll go down in infamy. It's one of those events that will be remembered 100 years from now. How could the world knowingly go down a path that legalizes Iranian uranium enrichment? It just doesn't make sense, and we have to do everything in our power to stop it.
Now, Prime Minister Netanyahu is coming to speak in the U.S. at APEC and at the Congress, and this seems to have increased the tensions between Israel and the U.S.
Look, it's no secret that right now the relations are tense, but our friendship with America goes way deeper than the two leaders. You know, the overwhelming majority of Americans support Israel. They understand that Israel is a beacon of freedom, of democracy in the toughest area in the world, and I think this bond is unshakable.
You fear any diplomatic revenge?
No, I think Israel needs to do everything in its power to prevent this disastrous deal from coming about, and that's what we're here to do.
Economy Minister Naftali Bennett, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Yoni.
Tali Bennett is an interesting young man. He's a promising leader in the Jewish state. He's, of course, I think he's American, you know, after all, we all American, but he's real American too. And he's understanding of the global condition is very bright. He comes from the high-tech business, and he decided to take a part of preserving the Jewish nation, because it's a task that we all hold. We need to pass along to the next generation a country that is suitable to bring more Jewish people around and to be, you know, to grow, to manufacture a lot of items, a lot of innovation, a lot of good things to the world, and to be strong and healthy and democratic in the middle of everything. And maybe the Middle East one day it will be a free zone for everybody to, you know, to come and visit. It will liberate himself from the struggles that they hold against Israel, and also to each other, because it's not just Israelis in the middle. They are really, really fighting with each other now. A lot of things have been said about Naftali, but something is sure. He loves the state of Israel, and he will do everything in his power to help it. He used to work with Benjamin Netanyahu, so he knows something about how a state needs to be run. He's very favorable to be in the coalition and the next rounds of government. We don't know how much of a seat he may take. He actually had a very good promise in the start, but for some reason it blew up. Some controversial nomination that was really controversial, because it was out of the box of the Jewish House Party box. And sometimes, you know, people tend to be very, very square, and they wanted the people, you know, built that belonged to them. They didn't open up to have a nomination from the kind that Naftali was seeing. But Naftali is a bright guy, and he saw the possibility, and he understood that the belief of man doesn't always come with the same cover. It's you know, people can be believe in the same thing and can be a part of the same team, even if they're different, of course. But this is like a traditional party, and they wanted to have to keep it that way. So it blew up a lot of steam in that segment, and he lost a lot of support in the audience. And sure enough, his promise to this election is getting to be a little mediocre. He's trying to pick it up, but it didn't succeed. So we're not seeing much of him, but we'll see if he can come up with some bright ideas. You know, in politics you can never say never, because everything can be changed until the last moment, and the last moment is always, you know, after the fat lady sang, right? So let's go to a break, and we'll come back after with something else.
And as Prime Minister of Israel, I have a moral obligation to speak up in the face of these dangers while there's still time to avert them. For 2,000 years, my people, the Jewish people, were stateless, defenseless, voiceless. We were utterly powerless against our enemies who swore to destroy us. We suffered relentless persecution and horrific attacks. We could never speak in our own behalf, and we could not defend ourselves. Well, no more. No more. The days when the Jewish people are passive in the face of threats to annihilate us, those days are over. Today in our sovereign state of Israel, we defend ourselves. And being able to defend ourselves, we ally with others, most importantly the United States of America, to defend our common civilization against common threats. In our part of the world, and increasingly in every part of the world, no one makes alliances with the weak. You seek out those who have strength, those who have resolve, those who have determination to fight for themselves. That's how alliances are formed. So we defend ourselves, and in so doing, create the basis of a broader alliance. And today, we are no longer silent. Today, we have a voice. And tomorrow, as Prime Minister of the one and only Jewish state, I plan to use that voice.
Me Davis, and we are back on BBS Radio. This is Impossible Truth, and that was Benjamin Netanyahu today in Washington, D.C., speaking before an audience of 17,000 people that gathered together for the AIPAC annual conference. AIPAC is the American-Israeli Political Affairs Committee, a lobbyist group that promotes and helps sustain a friendship, a tie, a strong tie between the state of Israel and the United States of America. They feel very American in their heart, but they want to preserve the Jewish state, and they do it with all what they can. AIPAC is one of the groups that I am honored to say that I was a member of it for many, many years. And I know the way they act, and I know the way they behave, and I know how candid and how truthful they are in their mission to preserve the relationship between those two countries. And today, this gathering, just, you know, in the midst of a talk with Iran, and, you know, and also the ceasefire in Russia and Ukraine, this is a big conference, and many things can be accomplished by talking and by speaking. And many people can come and talk and be a part of this effort of a democratic state. You know, America taught the world so many beautiful things. And one thing that I can say that I'm so proud of is that I learned how democratic nation needs to behave. And if I bring anything to the table today in Israel, I bring the way to do the American way. America teaches us so many things that we need to remember and learn very well, because their way of thinking is global. They think about the world when they do things. Of course, there are so many forces, and there are a lot of battles, and there is a lot of wanting, and the lobby group is supposed to promote something. But AIPAC is about, you know, keeping a friendship going. This is awesome. Now today, more than ever, when the stress between the American government and the Israeli government, and nobody is hiding it, there is a lot of stress, and the stress comes from the power struggle all around the world. Maybe Israel is not doing enough to give more information, maybe, or maybe they're giving all they can, but it's not, it doesn't seem that makes sense. But, you know, just I want to remind everybody something. That whatever we have on our plate, it's a play with faith. It's this is a rendezvous with destiny. as Ronald Reagan said once, it's a rendezvous with destiny. We need to approach it with a little self-confidence that God is here. Don't ask, you know, when it's going to play. You just know it's going to be there. And you know it's going to be wonderful because God's hands are in the midst. This is His promised land. He wanted this country to be created. That's His promise. Now, America, you know, every time we struggle, it means that our understanding of the way God perceives of what our future is supposed to be is different. It reminds me, you know, in the Bible, they say when God created Adam, He created, you know, Eve to be an help against Him. And we ask, why God created Ezer Kenegdo? Why God created the wife, the woman, Eve, to be against Him? Because every time a man strays, the wife is lining him up, and not because God forbid, you know, she control him. It's because she sees the line. And every time, you know, when you're across the ocean and across, you know, thousands of miles away, you know that you see there, you know, differently from what Israel is seeing here. And the land of Israel is made in the middle of all this because there is so much confusion. It's because we're supposed to start it to bright from here. Why don't we trust each other at this point? Why don't we understand that our goals are the same? Our tradition are touching each other. And no matter who is in charge, we are always on the same direction and the same page. There is nothing controversial between what's happening here and happening there. It's all the same plan of God. Now, life is really funny sometimes. And sometimes you find yourself, you know, pondering where we are going. And the other says, you know, you have to watch out. This is not safe. That is the alert you get today from the state of Israel. This way is dangerous for all. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to settle? You're going to say, okay, this is agreement that we're going to sign because we decide to sign an agreement just because to keep them quiet or keep somebody, you know, happy. No, you cannot. You know why? Because you know better. If you know better, you cannot sign any deal that doesn't represent safety guard for the world. And by all means, it means that there is no nuclear weapon in the hands of people who threaten to use it. What's is going on is America needs to get back and remember she's not alone. There is a God, and she and God bless America. Just remember that. God bless America means that she is with God constantly, like the promised land. That's so normal, so makes sense. It just makes sense that we are all in this battle to remind ourselves that after all, we are true believers. We are believers. And day in and day out, and all the struggle, we all came up on top. And now that we help, and you know, now that America helped create the state of Israel together, and preserve it, and made it in their mission statement that she's going to keep the only democracy. It's because it's like her baby, you know. It's like the mother shadow have a baby shadow that says, you know, this is a sample of who we are. Now, if you come and say this baby that we created is not really what we are, it's like not being truthful to oneself. And you know, you cannot be that, because whoever you are, you're wonderful. Whoever we are, we're wonderful. We're one. And we are part of each other, and nothing you can change about it. And sometimes we are not lucky, we're not lucky about, looking at the mirror and saying, oh, we don't like the way we look. Yes, sure we don't, but that's what we are. So let's shape up. And something you know about shaping up, you have to go back to work and say, okay, what's wrong here with this picture? Well, let's work it out. Collaboration, help, preservation, and also focus. Let's focus. Let's make sure that we know that this part of our body is going to be okay. We just have to work it out. And you know what? The long distance sometimes keep us, slaggy. We're not together. We're not talking the same language, but it's okay. We can make it because we are part of the same entity. We're liberty. We're democracy. We're freedom. We are love. We are caring. And we are blessed by God. So let's keep it on. Keep it on. And this friendship, by God, this friendship is so mighty that this only struggle that we just got in to only make us stronger. It's going to make us more beautiful. And I'm sure, like in every love affair, sometimes when we have struggle, the making up is much prettier. Let's go to a break, and after we go back and talk some more about love, happiness, and the day after. As always, here with you, Lily Benedeiros on BBS Radio.
When the UN Human Rights Council held a special session last July to create a commission of inquiry to investigate alleged human rights violations committed in the context of military operations in the Palestinian territories, we cast the sole no vote on a profoundly flawed resolution that focused overwhelming criticism on Israel without once mentioning Hamas. Not once. And this after Hamas had fired approximately 4,000 rockets on Israel from Gaza last year. Before the United States joined the UN Human Rights Council in 2009, more than half of all the country-specific resolutions adopted there were focused on Israel. Today, we've helped lower that proportion to less than a third. But let me stress, the Human Rights Council has still adopted many more resolutions criticizing Israel than it has on North Korea, a totalitarian state in which roughly 100,000 people are currently being held in gulags and where children are forced to witness the execution of their parents. At the Security Council, we have also guarded vigilantly against any resolution that threatens Israel's security or undermines the pursuit of peace. That is why, in December, we opposed efforts to pass a deeply imbalanced Security Council resolution on Palestinian statehood and successfully rallied other countries to do the same. As I told the UN Security Council at the time, the United States recognizes, as do many Israeli leaders, that a two-state solution is vital to ensuring the preservation of a Jewish and democratic Israel. And we stand ready. We stand ready, as we always have, to support and engage with the parties in working toward that two-state solution. But progress toward that solution will require brave leadership and tough decisions. And as successive U.S. administrations have made clear for decades, Israeli settlement activity damages the prospects for peace. Nor will one-sided actions in international bodies or accession to international treaties, such as actions against Israel at the International Criminal Court, help us get to a negotiated solution. It is a false choice to tell Israel that it has to choose between peace on the one hand and security on the other. The United Nations would not ask any other country to make that choice, and it should not ask it of Israel. We have pressed the UN Security Council to respond when Israelis are victims of terror. For 7 years leading up to 2012, the Council would not even issue a single press statement condemning an attack on Israel. Last year, it issued three, including one denouncing the sickening kidnapping and murder of the three Israeli teenagers, Naftali Frankel, Gilad Shaer, and Eyal Yifrak. Day in and day out, we fight for Israel's full and equal participation in UN bodies. While membership in these groups may sound bureaucratic, these are the organs where actual policies are hammered out. They matter. For years, Israel was the only UN member state that was excluded from a regional body at the UN in Geneva, and the only group that had no group to caucus with in New York in the General Assembly committee that addresses human rights. I was determined to change this, and we did. In January 2014, after a sustained full-court diplomatic press, we helped secure for Israel permanent membership in what's called the Western European and Others Group, the group that we belong to, and in February 2014, we secured Israel's membership in the like-minded Human Rights Caucus from which it had long been excluded in New York. Now, no one will have to fight those battles again. Unfortunately, there are so many more battles. Confronting anti-Israel bias is part of a long bipartisan American tradition at the UN. It is part of the legacy of every single U.S. ambassador to the United Nations who's come before me, from my predecessor, Ambassador Rice, who fought tirelessly for Israel's equal treatment and helped put in place the toughest multilateral sanctions regime in history against Iran, back through master diplomats from both parties, from Moynihan to Kirkpatrick, Albright to Holbrooke. Why does the U.S. put so much into this effort? I would borrow the explanation that President Johnson gave shortly after the Six-Day War, when the Soviet premier asked him why the United States was supporting Israel, a nation so vastly outnumbered by neighboring countries with which it was at war. Johnson responded, quote, "Numbers do not determine what is right," end quote. That was true for America's support for Israel in 1967, and it is true for America's support for Israel today. And the reason it is right, as Johnson said, is because we believe in Israel. We believe in the values of pluralism, freedom, and democracy that it represents. And we believe that the Jewish people should always have a homeland that is safe and secure.
And we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis, and this is BBS Radio. This was Samantha Fox, on the ambassador of the United, to the United Nations of the United States of America. Her presence in the APEC conference makes a difference. Her statement is unique. Her work is outstanding, and God bless her for whatever, you know, else she will do, because she's wonderful. And women do see the difference. Women care. And I think that it's time that we have more women sent as ambassadors, because we need to hush all the drums of war that is pounding everywhere. And all those, wonderful jets that fly, needs to take some vacation. All those jets need to take family to discover new oceans. It's enough with war. It's enough. We can destroy the whole world in a few seconds if we put our head into it. But then it will take us forever to build it again. You know what? Let's grow up. Let's just grow up. It means that we need to talk about things. And, for many reasons, the left are outspoken very much in Israel these days, and they say, let's change, the prime minister. We're so tired of him. And I say, what? I believe that the prime minister of Israel is actually believes in peace, because he wouldn't insist in so much, talking and his speech tomorrow just will represent you like he believes. that he can convince. If not, you would have done something about it. But he didn't want to because he believes in, you know, in a different world, a world that can be actually, you know, solve the problem in a diplomatic way. We can do it. It's up to us. And, you know, Jerusalem, something about the United Nations, I need to go back to the United Nations because the United Nations problem is they don't read their own, you know, chapters sometimes. Because let's say in 1947 in Resolution 181, they stated that Jerusalem is international. Corpus separatus, it doesn't belong to everybody. And the story behind the scene was told like that. They said to, they came to the people of the Jewish people and said, you know, what about Jerusalem? They said, Jerusalem is God. You know, the rabbinical believer. They want, you know, the miracle just. They didn't stand up for God in that moment. They said, this is where the custodian will take care of it. And, you know, the United Nations understood that, you know, there is nobody who can, they can give it to, so they decided to make it internationally. Now, they sent somebody to preserve it, and sure enough, he was killed because somebody got to him. It wasn't such a safe haven then, not that it's all steady and quiet this day, but thank God everything is quiet and good on this side of the border. And we are talking about Jerusalem then, and it's nobody sent anybody else to preserve the state of international corpus separatum from the rest. And then it got, of course, occupied by the Jordanian power, and in 1967 was liberated by Israel. Since then we had 40 years of joint effort to preserve all religions' rights, freedom of worship, access, and building. Now, when the United Nations says occupy Jerusalem, I want to differ, and I beg, you know, I beg their pardon because they need to get their act together, really. And I'm saying it with all respect. It's really hard. Jerusalem is holy site for, you know, for our holy city, for everybody in the world who believes in one God. So once you just let it be, what do you think it's going to happen? Somebody has to take control of it. And I really resent that occupation because we have the title from the biblical time. You guys didn't take care of it. We actually liberated it. It means that we want it free and clear in the 67 war. And then we even had a peace treaty with Jordan. You know what? We actually got Jerusalem because Jordan did not claim Jerusalem. They just claimed to be custodian of the shrine. Now, the shrine is not Jerusalem. The shrine that they have is a mosque. Of course, you know, every religion is custodian of their own religion, you know, holy sites, or not holy sites, holy shrine. Now, the rest of it is Jerusalem, was by treaty, was agreed upon. Now, they still want to preserve the right to some people, who today they call themselves Palestinian, tomorrow they're calling themselves whatever, and they can go from back and forth from all countries. You know, I love that faction. They come and they go and they become 3 million, 4 million, they're 2 million, they're 1 million, they're 9 million, they're, who are they? Who are they? All the, you know, the nomad people that comes around, they can become one moment, you know, and they're Palestinian because they're all Muslims, okay? So, it's, you know, they belong to a country, but they all come from a different nation. They're not. They want America of the Muslims. That's fair. I can get it. I can get that too. You know, they deserve an America. And they deserve it. And we, by all means, we are happy to be an example how to be. But please, you know, give us some space. Give us some space. But, and you know what? On top of everything, Jerusalem is supposed to be, you know, organized right. There is no time to let it be free and go crazy. And, oh, you know what? You have to stop building in Jerusalem because we are going to give it eventually to those people. We don't know who's in charge. And tomorrow they're going to give it the key to Hamas, you know, declared already a terrorist organization by Egypt recently. Of course, that, you know, there are controversy around the world what they represent. But maybe they are not that bad. You know, maybe they can come like the Palestinian, become a normal political party. But it's evolving. It's evolving. Jerusalem is not a site to be neglected. You know what? There are places in the world, you just don't let it be. You keep it as safe and clear and happy and wonderful. And by all means, you must build Jerusalem. If anybody say to stop building is gone against the evolution of a wonderful holy city. I want Jerusalem to be finished, to be built on the road. Let us make the road to East Jerusalem. It's enough already. What's wrong with all those people who stop? I see, you know, you just go one block to the east and you find all, you know, like you're going back in history 100 years. And it's holy sites around all inside Jerusalem. Come on. Nothing to be ashamed of. Well, they got to have work. They'll work, but it's because it's going to be, what, free? Or you want to have fundamental Islam there? I don't think so. You don't want that to explore even the possibility that they're going to take over there. You know, and the way we're keeping the democratic nation out of touch, you're just giving somebody else to come up with a different solution. Maybe that is the problem. And as always, we have to remember, it all starts with the holy site. You have to remember it's God's holy site and you have to keep it free and holy. Let's do it. Let's try a different route. It's about time. Let's see if we can put some music on so we can lighten a little the atmosphere. I love to be on this show sometimes because I talk about God so much.
Beloved friends, I'm actually only here to give you a change of accents. I just hope you don't need simultaneous translation. But I'm here as part of an English delegation to give you the view from Europe. And the view from Europe is that APAC is something out of this world. It is just amazing. Friends, it reminds me, if I can just give you the story, lovely story about Yossi, an Israeli, who opened a falafel bar in Golders Green. You know, the Golders Green is the English Brooklyn. And Yossi's falafel bar was one day visited by the tax inspector, who was reading through his books, and he was saying, "Mr. Yossi, this falafel of yours, this is a kind of Jewish takeaway, am I right?" And Yossi, with a big smile, says, "Yes." The tax inspector says, "Mr. Yossi, I understand what you've written down as expenses, rent, electricity, materials, but why have you written down under business expenses 2 trips to Miami and 3 trips to Tel Aviv?" And Yossi, with a big smile, said, "That's easy. We deliver." Friends, APAC, you deliver. You deliver a strong Israel and a strong Jewish people. May God bless you, and may you continue to bless the people in the State of Israel. Friends, I want to tell you how things are looking like in Europe today. When I was a child, there was one line in the Haggadah that I never understood. Lo achad bilvad, it was not one alone who stood against us. Elo b'chol dovado amdim aleinu l'chaloteinu, but in every generation they did so. And always as a child, I used to say, that belongs to my parents' generation, not to us. Not to us born after the Holocaust. I grew up in all my life. I never experienced a single incident of anti-Semitism. Until 11 years ago. 11 years ago, our youngest daughter, who was studying at a British university, came home in tears. She had been at an anti-globalization rally, which quickly turned into a tirade, first against America, then against Israel, then against Jews. And with tears in her eyes, she said, Dad, they hate us. That is a terrible situation, but it's reality in Europe today. In the last 2 weeks, there have been stories about the rise of anti-Semitic incidents in France by 58% in a single year, in Belgium 30%, in Denmark doubled in the space of 3 years. In England, in France and Italy, English football supporters were attacked, not because they were Jews, but because they were supporting a football team, many of whose supporters happened to be Jews. And I don't know whether you read this, I'm sure you did. Last Wednesday, the Turkish president, Mr. Erdogan, called Zionism a crime against humanity. I have to tell you that what we grew up with, never again, is beginning to sound like ever again. And at the heart of it is hostility to Israel. Of course, not all criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic, but make no mistake, what has happened? In the Middle Ages, Jews were hated because of their religion. In the 19th century and the 20th, they were hated because of their race. Today, when it's no longer done to hate people for their religion or their race, today they are hated because of their state. The reason changes, but the hate stays the same. Anti-Zionism is the new anti-Semitism. And friends, I've come here to tell you that I believe the example of AIPAC must now inform Jewish communities around Europe, because we have to stand up and fight, and we have to stand up and win. Friends, anti-Zionism is today rife throughout the world. All our students on campuses know about it. And what is our crime? What is Israel's crime? It's that we have chutzpah. Let me tell you the chutzpah we have. After all, there are 56 Islamic states. There are 125 nations whose majority is Christian. And now Jews want a state of their own. How dare they? And it's so big. Friends, you know how big Israel is. There's a lovely park in a little corner of South Africa. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's a sort of wild game reserve where you can see lions and giraffes and elephants and hippopotamuses or hippopotami, depending on whether or not they've had a classical education. It is called the Kruger National Park. Friends, Israel is the same size as Kruger National Park. How dare they want something that big? Don't Jews by now know that their role in history is to be scattered, dispersed, homeless, and defenseless, and now they want a space where they can defend themselves? How dare they? Friends, we dare because we are human. We dare because to be denied the right to self-defense is to be treated as less than human. Mr. Erdogan, it is anti-Zionism that is a crime against humanity. How much longer? How much longer must the Jewish people have to fight for the right to be? Let me tell you, friends, what is Israel? Elaine and I have just come back, just 10 days ago, we were on a series of missions in Israel, and let us remind you what we saw, what you saw, what everyone sees, but the world does not see. We saw school after school and youth village after youth village, where children at risk or children from dysfunctional or abusive families are taken and given the care that will give them hope and a future in life. We saw youth villages where Ethiopian children are given the means suddenly to make that leap across centuries and cultures and find their own excellence. We saw the power of love to transform lives. We saw hospitals. I don't know if you've been recently to the Rambam Hospital in Haifa. In Haifa, the Rambam Hospital is building the world's largest underground hospital. Proof against bombs, missiles, chemical and biological weapons, so that when Israel's enemies decide to destroy lives, they will continue saving them. We saw the new Bar Ilan Medical Center in Safat set up to bring the finest possible medical treatment. Who to? Only to Jews? No. To Muslims, to Christians, to Druze villages throughout the Galilee, because to be a Jew in Israel means you care for every life. Every life is sacred. We saw the Laniado Hospital in Netanya, a place I always visit because it moves me almost beyond words. Many of you know the Laniado Hospital was built by the Klausenberger Rebbe, a survivor of Auschwitz who during the Holocaust lost his wife and all 11 children, and there in the camps of death made an oath that if he should ever survive, he would dedicate the rest of his life to saving life. That is what I see in Israel. Every time I visit Israel, I find among Israelis, secular or religious, an absolute unswerving dedication to Moshe Rabbeinu's great command, Uvacharta v'chaim, choose life. Israel is the sustained defiance of hatred and power in the name of life, because we are the people who sanctify life. Friends, in the last decade, the equation has changed. Today, the struggle against Israel is no longer just against Israel. Today, what is at stake in Israel's survival is the future of freedom itself. Because make no mistake, this will be the defining battle of the 21st century, which will prevail. The will to power with its violence, terror, missiles, and bombs, or the will to life with its hospitals, schools, freedoms, and rights. Believe you me, I have the privilege of knowing. See, Christians, Hindus, Sikhs, moderate Muslims. And I tell you from my experience, Israel is a source of inspiration, not just to us, but to them as well. Because it tells every single person on the face of the earth that a nation doesn't have to be large to be great. A nation doesn't have to be rich in natural resources to prosper. Israel has been surrounded by enemies, and yet it has shown that even so, you can still be a democracy, still have a free press, still have an independent judiciary. Israel is the only country in the Middle East where a Palestinian can stand up on national television and criticize the government and the next day still be a free human being. Israel is an inspiration to the world, and since we spend a certain amount of our time traveling around the world, we see this only too richly. I still have, because once upon a time Hong Kong had a little bit to do with the British Empire. We lost Hong Kong, we lost the Empire Viscomandant. I'm not so pleased about you lot either, 1776, don't think we've forgotten, but still. And so it was one of my visits to Hong Kong after the handover. I went to see Mr. Tung Chee Hwa, the Beijing appointment as head of Hong Kong. And I tell you, this man, this Chinese appointment, was a lover of Jews and Judaism and Israel. He said to me, you know, your people and my people are very old people. You've been around 6,000 years. We've been around 5,000 years. Tell me, I always wanted to know, what did you do for the first 1,000 years before you had kosher Chinese takeaways? I said, Mr. Tung, you want to know what we did for the first 1,000 years? We complained about the food. And Mr. Tung said to me, I want to go and visit Israel because I see that as the model of development for here. And he did go 2 or 3 months later and came back absolutely inspired. And I went straight to the Israeli ambassador in London and said, look how the world has changed. There was a time when Israel dreamed about being the Hong Kong of the Middle East. Today, Hong Kong dreams. Halavai, we should be the Israel of the Far East. Friends, we have people who do strange things in Britain. 3 years ago, I don't know if you read this in the papers, the British atheists paid a fortune for London buses to carry a logo saying, probably, there is no God. Did you read about this? They actually, all the London buses, there's probably no God. So I wrote about this, you know, that's a very interesting word, probably. After all, how probable is it that the universe should exist? How probable is it that life should exist? How probable is it that out of all the 3 million life forms on the planet Earth, only one, us, is capable of asking the question why? Nothing interesting is remotely probable. And then I said, think about the Jewish people. How probable is it that one man, Abraham, who commanded no empire, ordered no army, performed no miracle, delivered no prophecy, should today without doubt be the most influential man who ever lived, who's claimed as the spiritual ancestor by 2.4 billion Christians, 1.6 billion Muslims, and most of you in the room today? How probable is it that this tiny people, the Jewish people, numbering less than 1/5 of 1% of the population of the world, should have outlived, as you just heard, the world's greatest empires, the Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Greeks, the Romans, every empire that ever stood up to destroy us? They have been consigned to history, and still we stand and sing Am Yisrael Chai. How likely is it that after 2,000 years of exile, our people should have come back to our land, and there, in having stood eyeball to eyeball in Auschwitz a mere 3 years earlier, eyeball to eyeball with the angel of death in 1948, said, despite the worst crime of man against man, Lo amut ki echya, I will not die, but I will live. Israel is the greatest collective affirmation of life in the whole of Jewish history. Friends, Judaism is the defeat of probability by the power of possibility, and nowhere will you see the power of possibility more than in the state of Israel today. Israel has taken a barren land and made it bloom again. Israel has taken an ancient language, the language of the Bible, and make it speak again. Israel has taken the West's oldest faith and made it young again. Israel has taken a shattered nation and make it live again. Friends, let us not rest until Israel's light shines throughout the world's great symbol of life and hope. Amen.
Amen. And we are back, and this is Orly Benny Davis on BBS Radio. Nothing like this is the music to my ears to hear the praise of God. Holy place. My goodness. Rabbi Sacks, the chief rabbi, former chief rabbi of England, the most admirable, incredible rabbi that represents the Israel tradition, Israel future, and Israel today. I love this man like I love the place that he come from, England. And I want to congratulate Her Majesty the Queen for her new coin that is fantastic. That was today, just got out, and it's glorious and made, you know, be preserved for thousands of years ahead. Guys, time is over for us today, and I know that it was amazing. I got tears in my eyes to hear the rabbi, and I just pray that tomorrow day, the session in the Congress will be beautiful, relaxing, and joyful to remember that we went through all of this to bring us to a new day. to a new tomorrow, a new future. It's going to be okay. God is with us. And may all the Jewish people around the world have a beautiful holiday of Purim, the holiday that represents the victory of the Jewish nation and the Jewish people over the Persian. And this is so typical of God to make it play at the right time in history. Again, history repeats itself, but, you know, glory of God is forever standing. God bless you all. I love you. I love you. I love you. And I hope that we see each other in always in good light with bright of Godness in us. And we know that we are equal among, you know, mankind. And be nice to each other. God bless you all. Thank you, everybody, for sharing this time with me. This is Orly Benny Davis on PBS Radio. Thank you, PBS Radio, for giving me this opportunity. And God bless you. Good luck, everybody. Tomorrow in APAC, I miss you a lot and love you. And talk to you next week.
If I should stay, I would only be in your way, so I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way. And both know I'm not what you need.